You're listening to Work Tape, episode 134.
Welcome to another edition of the Work Tape podcast. It's your boy, Money Mitchell. Isaac Groovin' Grover, as always.
Hello, guys.
So we talked a little bit about Bob Marley, as we have on this channel. And his birthday was not that long ago. And the release of the biopic One Love just recently came out. Ziggy Marley was a big producer on it as well. And I had the chance to go and check it out for myself. So I'm going to give you a bit of a quick review. That's kind of the small film section of the Work Tape podcast here. Basically, I thought the film was pretty solid with the Marleys being so heavily involved. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, a thing of making sure that Bob is in the best light possible. It's not exactly like a tell-all, but I do think Kingsley Benadire is the guy who played Bob Marley, and then actually who played Rita, the actress who played Rita, Latasha Lynch, both of them did really excellent jobs coming in like to the characters. The one thing that is really cool about the Marley film is actually everybody authentically speaks Patois. Like all the Jamaican people speak Patois.
That's a relief because yeah, that's a big detail.
They speak it so well, as a matter of fact, that at a couple of points when they were going in like the studio sessions, I was like, I may need subtitles just to understand exactly what they're saying.
That's good.
So they were very authentic in regards to the language between the Jamaican people, which I thought was a very nice attention to detail. The overall, like some of the best scenes revolve around like the studio sessions and like the making of the music. You really get like the vibe that Marley and the Wailers may have had in the studio, which was, you know, kind of more of a free flowing thing. They didn't really, it seemed like from a songwriting standpoint, they didn't have like a bunch of songs already on the bottom shelf of the drawer to just go in with. It was almost kind of like jazz in a way, where they kind of built some grooves and then did some lyrics around the grooves.
So that's how Bob typically does write. And obviously for Exodus, which is what the movie is kind of centered around, just after Rossmann Vibration, I'm assuming, because I didn't watch it. But based on what I've known about his songwriting, they do tend to jam and then make a song around that. And I think that's something that is evident when you listen to their music, because there is a free flowy kind of carefree, relaxed attitude to their sound. And it's actually jazz-like in its attitude. So it's a pretty cool detail that you brought up.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I remember hearing a demo or a behind the scenes version of when they were making Waiting in Vain, which is one of the more popular songs off of Exodus, one of the more popular Marley love songs out there. And yeah, you hear in the recording, because it was basically like someone just almost like left the tape running and they just picked up everything. You hear like the foundation of the groove, like the two chord groove, like was always there. And then you hear like Aston kind of coming in on the bass. And then for a while, you just hear Bob kind of sing somewhat of like a gibberish lyric. And then he connects.
Yep, that's what he does.
And then he connects the phrases. Another thing that the movie touched on that I really enjoyed was the Rastafarian aspect of Bob and how much the Rastafarian religion and way of life was part of what made him him. You know, there's a lot of focus on like a lot of the ritualistic aspects, how much of an influence it had on like his early life.
He grew up Catholic too.
Yeah. But they don't really go much into the Catholicism aspect.
Of course not, because by that point he was pretty hardcore Rasta, but he definitely grew up. Most people don't realize that he wasn't Rasta his whole life. In fact, there's also a lot of talk about the fact that he died not a Rasta. So that's like another topic.
Yeah. And then, of course, I think like his dad was like white, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the Marley name. That's the white side of him.
Yeah, they do mention a little bit of that as well. So it's overall a good film. The one thing I would say is actually it was kind of short. It was like only a little longer than an hour and a half. To be honest, I wouldn't have minded a 2 hour or 2.5 hour film, especially with the way that they did it. So that was like really my only kind of criticism was just it felt really short and it just felt like
kind of rushed.
Well, yeah, you not rushed, but like you just got like this very uber specific brief pocket of time. And I think that like if it would have been an extra half an hour to maybe go into a little bit of what happened before the events of kind of the Exodus era, I think that would have been nice. But I don't know. I think you should see it for yourself and kind of
give my consensus. Do you think that maybe it might have helped the movie that they didn't go into all that detail and possibly ruin, you know, a biopic because they were too ambitious? Because it sounds like they probably played it a little bit safe.
Yeah, I mean, there's very much that possibility of if you make a movie too long that and you try to include too much that you're not going to get enough. But I think about a film like Straight Outta Compton, which was, you know, 2.5 hours, and it really told the story like very effectively.
Right.
Of, you know, the upbringing of all these guys, obviously the making of some of their famous records, the controversy of their records.
How many years did that span though? Wasn't it like 3 or 4?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Because Bob's is like a good, from 1960, like from the early 1960s all the way to 1980 is a lot of time.
Right. And they do, and the film, they did time jump a little bit. Like they had some parts kind of like early Wailers. Hmm. So anyway, I think you should kind of like see it for yourself. But I know that the critics are kind of not a big fan of it right now. But the audiences.
Probably like the Avatar series. That's a bit of a hit or miss too.
Yeah, but the audiences are loving it. So, I mean, I think that it's a good film. I don't know if it's one of those ones where I'm kind of like, you know, blown away by it, but it's a solid film.
It passes.
Yeah. I think the biggest compliments I can give it, of course, were once again, the acting. I think the acting was really solid, especially between, you know, who played Bob and Rita, because that's like so much of like what that film is too, is like their relationship. And then the authenticity to making sure that everybody was speaking, you know, like patois.
That one's a big one, which I'm very surprised to hear you say, because we've been watching documentaries of them. So they didn't need to do that or fake it. So it's kind of crazy to hear that for this, that they actually nailed down the vernacular, because, you know, you listen to his interviews, and even though my family have that heritage,
yeah,
I don't understand patois that well.
Right.
So
yeah, you're kind of like, what did they say again?
I'm very Americanized, so I have to go like a couple generations back to kind of get into that patois.
And the other thing I appreciated is that they didn't really use much of any AI in this. You didn't get it.
That's so nice.
You didn't get like an AI Bob Marley, which is really nice as well. Everything was, you know, real. It was, you know, real people. And if they did have changes to how people looked, they did it through, you know, makeup and practical effects as opposed to AI. And speaking of AI, there's a fair amount of AI in Billy Joel's newest music video for a song that he released, which is crazy because he hasn't released a song in like, what, 30 years? Like an original song in 30 years?
When was his last release? Was it the 90s?
Yeah, it was like the early 90s, I think. And I don't remember that album being like particularly good either. I think I remember a lot of people were like thinking he kind of left with a bit of a whimper.
It's okay. There was a huge shift in the 90s. So that whole like sports bar pop rock was probably, you know what I mean? It was at its kind of end. So I think it works now for him to do stuff because we have Adele and we have John Legend. So those ballads really play well at this point.
Oh yeah, very much so. And I think like, there's just like a kind of resurgence in nostalgia from that time period coming back into fruition. And this song, Turn the Lights Back On, If you're a Billy Joel fan and you love the balladeer Billy Joel, it's pretty standard issue.
I liked it.
It's a good song. It's not like going to set the world on fire, even as much as like the Beatles song that came out, which kind of did cause some waves just because
it's because it's the Beatles. Now and Then wasn't that crazy. It's just because it was Lennon's, I guess, his unfinished song, and the boys put something together, and then George died, and now we have just Paul and Ringo. So it's kind of a cool coming around, I guess.
Yeah.
But with what was it? The Lights? I keep wanting to say Turn the Lights Down Low. But what was the name of the Joel one again? I've totally forgot.
Turn the Lights Back On.
Yeah, Turn the Lights Back On. See, so similar. So I thought it was cool. I liked it. But, you know, classic, simple Billy Joel ballad. Nothing really that unique. The power of his songs, which like any other really good song, is the simplicity of it. And it was just a very simple song.
Yes.
But of course, the star of the show was kind of seeing him changing his age with the AI. That I don't know if it's called a deep fake by this point, but it was just kind of cool to see how they changed his appearance throughout the video. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, they started with him being current, you know, which is, you know, an older gentleman, and then they go from like the Piano Man era to the late 80s, like kind of Stormfront era, and then the last one that actually is before the current one was like the River of Dreams, Billy Joel. So yeah, three kind of very distinct eras.
I have a question for you.
What's that?
Do you think, see, because it's funny, it's very fitting. We're talking about biopics. We're talking about AI.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? You think they're going to start doing that more?
With what? Like an AI?
Yeah. Instead of trying to hire actors, that now they can just mimic them much better now.
Oh, you're saying instead of hiring someone to act out somebody to just get the actual person and de-age them digitally?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes and no. I think it's going to depend.
Because I know there are going to be some estate problems too, but I'm just wondering, you know what I mean? Like if there's a way that they can get like the rights for it, I feel like I can see that happening. Because remember, I mean, it's cool. Look, there's an art to a biopic where someone plays a character or plays someone in real life. So there is an art form behind it. I don't think that's necessarily going to die.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see people, for the sake of authenticity, are probably going to want to, you know, figure out how they can talk to the estates to make a movie. And sure, with how good AI is good. I mean, OpenAI already released that new software or that whole movie model thing.
Uh-huh.
The animation model. And so Things are much better now than they were 2 or 1 year ago.
Yeah. With the AI thing, to be honest, what I think might actually end up happening is they may use AI to maybe enhance like the look. They may have an actor, you know, continue to play them, but they may use the AI to like, maybe they'll use the AI more instead of like the makeup.
So they'll blend it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think they're going to try to do.
Right.
Because the technology is getting that much better in regards to the aging and whatnot, I think that that's what's more likely to happen, especially when they're doing biopics like this, where I think they will have somebody who will do like the physical stuff, but then they'll use more of an AI and kind of makeup blend, maybe just to capture that look even further.
So it's like an even better CGI, so to speak.
Right. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen, just because I don't think you're going to have an outright replacement where it's like all AI generated.
Well, do you think that could happen at least? Maybe not now, but that possibly could happen.
Maybe. But the tech would have to go up like even a couple more notches
Before
like we really start to see that happen.
Yeah, I agree.
And a big reason of like the actor strike and why all those actors just refused to work and went on strike was for that very reason, was for like the AI implementation, where these studios were trying to implement AI and basically they weren't going to, you know, use physical actors, or they were going to like use an AI likeness of the actor and not pay them if they reused it in other films. And that was obviously a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So That was the whole reason behind that. So I don't think that that's because it was a big deal about, you know, that pretty much took up a big chunk of last year and hurt the industry so much to where it's going to take them a while to recover. I don't think you're going to really have that as a possibility of a full AI for biopics, but I think it's more of a blend. I'll be curious to see if they do any of that for the MJ one. Although it looks like from the pictures, it looks like they're going to keep it practical.
It seems that Jafar's, yeah, I agree. I think if I believe that maybe people will favor family members that look like the counterparts.
Yeah.
That seems like that would be the preferred.
Right.
But I agree. I could see where they're going to probably blend it because practical does do better. I mean, hence the Star Wars. Well, sorry, the first three.
Yeah, practical effects just hits a little bit different. And from the pictures, they're really going pretty hardcore with the MJ biopic. And I think by all accounts, it should be, I think, really great. The one thing about family members that's tricky too is obviously you need to make sure that they can act and that they can really like embody the part.
Of course.
You know, obviously they didn't get Ziggy Marley to play his dad, or they didn't get, you know, YG Marley or Skip to play his dad.
Right.
They got somebody else, you know, who could probably handle more of the acting side. And then I think for the singing, I think it was a blend of Kingsley's voice and Bob's.
Yeah, it doesn't just span the visual, but also the audio. And I think that's kind of cool where they mix the original actor's voice with the audio of the original artist.
Yeah, they did that with Rami Malek for the Queen film. They blended his actual voice, they blended Freddie's voice, and then who's the guy? Is it Brian Luttrell? They blended all three of those.
I watched it. It was pretty, the musical aspects. I mean, I agree with you. I felt like the ending of the movie was weird, but the musical, the theatrical aspect of the movie was pretty cool.
Yeah. And the problem I had with that was they just completely like disregarded the timeline.
That's what I'm saying. That too.
I get why they did it because they wanted it to be like, oh, he's, you know, Freddie's overcoming AIDS to go and play Live Aid, even though he didn't get like the effects of AIDS until like way later after Live Aid. And they made it seem like the band was going to split like right before that show, even though they were fine. But it's like, so it's like, I don't know, but that's what bothered me about that one. Yeah. So the Billy Joel, like I said, pretty standard affair stuff. You know, if you're a big fan of ballads and that sound, you're going to love that song. I don't know if he's going to drop more music or if he's just dropping this song. And then he is going on tour, which is, you know, something he hasn't done also for a very long time. He's been pretty much exclusive, mostly to New York, kind of in the way that Bruno is exclusive almost to Vegas at this point. Which I don't blame him. At a certain point in your career, you're kind of like, if it benefits me more to just stay in one place and just play, you know, shows and have a residency there, I get it. Those deals are good, you know, for the music side of things. But I'll see if I can try to go catch him on tour just because, as I was saying before, kind of like with Elton John, the window of opportunity to actually see like some of these quote unquote, like legacy acts live is dwindling. Really quick.
Queen Bey.
Yeah, really quick. Speaking of more of a legacy act, because Beyonce, I guess, is actually at this point a bit of a legacy act in her own right. I mean, granted, obviously not as old as some of the other artists we've mentioned, but like I said, definitely has left a profound legacy impact.
Not as old as Madonna.
No. Which Madonna was just released that video with The Weeknd, which I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I get it. The Weeknd's in his 80s bag. And, you know, Madonna is fitting for that type of song. But it's just like,
what? She's a bit of a photo bomb in the music industry. I'm sorry.
It's just like, why? Like, you just, you don't... you don't have anything to prove anymore. Like, just, you can chill. Like, chill. But who's not chill are these country radio stations. These country radio stations and some country artists are still a bit upset with this Beyonce track, this Texas Hold'em track, which, okay, I understand, because there's some people who are going to say that Beyonce could be taking away legitimate real estate from, quote unquote, and I'm going to, you know, use kind of some air quotes, but like true country artists. Like, you know, they're saying that she's taking up space for what are like true country artists. Some are questioning how like legitimately country the song is. Someone compared it to the Applebee's song, and that if it was done by anybody else, that it wouldn't even really be garnering much of any attention. To me, this just feels like the Lil Nas X thing all over again. In both cases, you know, you had a black artist coming into the country music space, and the people in country music, the old heads in country music, the gatekeepers of country music, are just not happy about it, despite the fact that country music, like blues, like rock and roll, is a black genre. So it's just, once again, I feel like it's kind of a repeat of the Old Town Road situation. And kind of like Old Town Road, the song is charting. And the song is, I think, in the top 10, if not even pretty close to number one.
I'm not surprised, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, these things kind of go in cycles. And I mean, to be honest with you, I actually kind of like the Beyonce song a little bit more even than the Old Town Road song.
Why not?
I felt like Old Town Road was like, was and still kind of is like,
wasn't it kind of gimmicky?
Novelty.
Yeah, novelty. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I felt.
Yeah, it's a novelty song, because basically, from what I heard, I think Lil Nas X wrote that song while he was playing Red Dead Redemption.
And it was a troll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, I'm playing Red Dead Redemption. I like this video game. I'm going to write a song. And then it ended up being like one of the most successful songs in history, mostly with the Billy Ray remix, which, I mean, wow. Billy Ray has coasted basically now off of just two huge songs with that and Achy Breaky Heart, which I guess also, so I guess he's not really in with country purists, because they didn't really like Achy Breaky either. They thought that that was kind of gimmicky.
Title's just garbage.
It's really bad.
It's so bad.
But it's
to talk about judge a book by its cover. You may in this instance.
But I mean, actually, the song is kind of heat, though. I mean, it is kind of typical 90s country, but it's better than people give it credit for. Let me just.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. That's
fine. I would take that over some of like the bro country that's been coming out recently.
I'm a bit of a pre-90s country guy myself. Like, I just, yeah. No, thank you. That's just me.
Yeah. So you're more like Brooks and Dunn and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I'm done with the with anything that's not from like the 70s and earlier. Some of the 80s stuff is kind of chill, I'm not gonna lie, but
yeah. So yeah, you're not bumping Morgan Wallen.
No, you know, it's funny, because when Casey kind of broke into the scene, that kind of revived a little bit of hope for me in country, because I kind of favor the folk artists anyway, the indie stuff.
Yeah.
And because of the similarities with folk and country, like when you go all the way back to the maybe even the 40s, 50s era.
Yeah.
I can dig country, you know, I can dig it. I just didn't like a lot of those manufactured accents. I felt like the emphasis on the accent and the lyrical subject matter was just a bit overdone. So I get it. You know, rap does it too. You know, I understand that all of these genres kind of have their cliches and their kind of like the taglines and phrases. So I understand it. Mm. So it's a little bit of a pick your poison scenario. And with country's poison, it was a bit too much for me.
Yeah.
So that's just my personal preference. But, you know, I like country spiritually. I'll say that much.
Yeah. So we'll definitely have to kind of just see once again how it all shakes out. And actually, I'm just seeing it right now. Apparently, actually, that Texas Hold'em song actually did reach number one on the country charts. So there you go.
Wow. There you go.
It'll be just very interesting to see how it all plays out. And I guess the only question that I have is B going to commit to this sound on the next album, or is it just a one-off? Like, to me, it seems like she's going to try to somewhat commit to this sound with the next record, but only time will tell.
I guess we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, but that'll just be for the other edition of the Worktape podcast. Thank you guys for enjoying this one. It's your boy, Money Mitchell, Isaac Ruben Grover, and be good to one another. And as Mick Jenkins says, drink more water or you might die.
Keep the peace, friends.